Hello and welcome to episode 101 Ooh. Of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Cassin-Rennie, and him,
El Guta.
Yay!
Well, how are you? Blimey.
101, a new century.
That's it. It's all downhill from now.
I know. It is, isn't it? Well, as if it wasn't that before.
Well, yeah. It assumes that we've reached some sort of peak, but clearly.
But listen, we're back from the summer.
Yes.
The 6 month long summer. Well, that's what it feels. Well, it is actually 6 months.
It's
long,
what it feels like.
Let's face it. It is. We're kind of semi getting back to normal.
Are
some
we?
More than others.
Are we?
But are we?
Is it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's all still kind of very un.
I'm scared.
I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, I read the news, I watch the news, and I just don't know what's going on anymore, to be fair.
No, I just look at the pretty pictures now. I don't particularly pay any attention to what's going on. But I've been watching on Twitter and social media and staying in touch with my broad array of friends, well, friend, and seeing that people are kind of getting back to some sort of normality and just seeing children finding their way. Not seeing too much negative stuff.
Aren't they so resilient?
The kids.
Like, I think the kids are way more resilient than we are. You know, I mean, Jacob's back at school. He has been a week. Mm-hmm. And like the run up to that was like, okay, so I've got antibac, I've got sanitizer, you know, you need to have Vim. Three masks in your bag just in case you lose one, you know, that kind of thing. It's just like the neurotic parent gone wrong and all over different stuff, you know. The
was
day
he chilled
before
out
went back
going
to school,
back?
We were sat in this. Was he?
Is he chilled out, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, totally. Like, we're just the weirdos and all this. We went to the meeting, a meeting the day before he went back, and like, in this classroom, and we were all sitting 2 meters apart with masks on in a meeting at school. And it's just like, oh God, what has life become? And of course, you couldn't detect any kind of hint of a smile or a grimace or a F you or, you know, anything like that.
So yes, I understand.
It's all very bizarre, all very bizarre.
Very
but
odd.
A week on, you know, there's been two phone calls, but not because of anything to do with anything that we would have expected. So that's bang just, on, touch wood.
Just standard
tap tap
parenting stuff.
Standard parenting rubbish.
Yeah, I think we've been the same. I think we Lottie was just desperate to go back, basically. And I think I've probably said it. Yeah. She's 15, coming up 15, and she just needs to be away from her mum and dad.
Yeah,
because that's healthy. Mm-hmm. That's developmentally appropriate. And the minute we all acknowledged that, we all got on much better. Sort of saying, we realize this is a living hell, and biologically and developmentally, you need to be somewhere else.
And so and there's no point in trying to pull her out of her bedroom, is there? Because, you know, if that's where she wants to be, then let her bang on with it.
Yeah. And so she's, and I think it's just been so incredibly healthy just to kind of have a bit more of a social life and to just be normal, you know, and that comes with its own set of flamboyant. Yeah, stuff, but it's healthy, it's normal, it's appropriate, you know, and, you know, bless her, the little one, she's doing okay, she's gone back to school, she was a little bit nervous, she's happy though, she's all good. So it feels like this, it's a new normal.
Yeah, I did see the photos of the little one and she didn't look too impressed about having to go back to school, has to be said.
The truth is she hates photographs. Can I get her to take photographs?
Yeah. Oh, really?
You know, every photograph I have to give her monetary bribes. Basically, she just doesn't want to have a photograph taken. Never has done, never liked it, won't do it. But however, she insists we do TikTok. So I've discovered the wonderment of TikTok. Don't know what I'm doing, but I
have... you know what you're doing, mate. You know what you're doing. I tell you, if people could see that in high power, they would never let you back into meetings again.
Well, I think if people go onto TikTok and search me, I'm there. So I think I posted one video of me and the family doing, cutting it into,
That's a place right now you won't find me because I am not that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm blissfully ignorant of all the dangers. We're just rocking through, and she's locked down her. She's got a tiny little account. We've locked it down. No one can look at it, not even me. So, you know, it's almost pointless. But she's very giddy. I'm conscious that we were chatting about what to do this week, and we're kind of we're not quite where we want to be, and we're not quite where we've been. We're in sort of in between episodes, aren't we? We're sort of, this is the episode that time forgot in some ways, because we don't particularly.
Well, it's coming up to our it's coming up to an anniversary. We've just passed our 100th episode.
Yeah,
you look a bit weird about the anniversary thing. It's like, what is it, how many years?
4 years.
In October?
So yeah, 4 years. Yeah. 4 years. 16th of October.
4 years. And also, we've still got loads to talk about. We've been doing the webcast over the summer.
Yes.
Yes.
And yes.
We've covered contact. And when we say covered, we haven't covered it in any way, shape or form as much as we would have liked to.
Scratch the surface.
But we've been very strict on the fact that we're going to do it in kind of months. And then obviously this month we're doing race, and then next month we're doing something different as well. But yeah, it's like there's so much to talk about. And I think because you and I have kind of taken on this new bullshit attitude about talking about things, and we're like, right, we need to talk about this. Right, how, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Do you know, it's like grumpy old men, isn't it?
Well, no, we're not being grumpy. We're just saying, I mean, and that sort of does reflect
on some
things.
I'm not old, thank you. I was expecting you to say something about the old. You said something grumpy.
Well, I'm not grumpy. But, you know, I'm embracing my grumpy oldness. But I think that it just raises this incredible frustration in me.
Yeah, it does.
That there is nowhere where we can have these conversations.
Yeah.
I see them sort of sometimes, I'll be honest, I see them in Adoption UK. Occasionally, I see them in their magazine because I get the magazine. I don't know how I get the magazine. It comes to me.
I'll tell you later.
All right, okay. You draw me a picture. But it feels that they're sanitized conversations, or they're edited, or they're kind of approved. Mm-hmm.
Is this real?
I want something that's a bit raw and a bit like, I don't get this, or actually this isn't right. So even the conversations about race, I mean, I've never been so anxious as I have been for the last two conversations.
You haven't? Jeepers creepers, man. I can't wait to talk about all the stuff that I know that you don't.
Well, I don't know about this, but Sat last week, before we pressed record, he said to me, he said, look, I know I can go on a bit, so interrupt me if I get too much. I said, what on earth do you think that I can interrupt you talking about race? A white man interrupts of colour. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh yeah, good point. I said, so you're just going to have to edit yourself, because I can't interrupt. And that sort of shows my level of anxiety about it. Yeah. But we need to have
some. And I'm the same. I mean, we talked to Twana earlier today, didn't we? And, you know, I'm always conscious of language, because I've learned over the time, language is quite a key part of all this.
Absolutely.
And I hate getting it wrong. And, you know, for anybody to come around and say, you said this. No, I really don't want that. But equally, really want that conversation to be had. And I think that, you know, neither of us, well, apart from your social work kind of thing, but neither of us have kind of any need to be kind of filtered in terms of what we talk about, as long as we're respectful of kind of whatever kind of population cohort we're talking about.
We should be able to ask any question.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it'd be like, you know, talking to a same-sex female couple. Neither of us are in a same-sex female relationship, so it'd be very difficult. And the same with race, same with all those kind of things, but actually they need talked about.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's where we are with the webcast anyway. Hashtag Wednesday webcast.
Wednesday webcast. I did think about maybe a topic, but I'm not sure how far we want to go on, but I really had this phrase came into my head about maybe something to do next, which is, what do we actually want from adoption support? Which sounds like a really obvious question, and it sounds like something that we know, but I thought it'd be really interesting to get, is there a consensus on that?
Well, I don't think there is, because I think every family is different, isn't it, in terms of what they need.
Yeah. And does it look
like? And I can sit here and say quite genuinely that there is no such thing in the country that I live in.
That's so a we're bad just choice have of to... country then, isn't it?
Well, it kind of is in some ways, isn't it?
I mean, you stupid you know, boy.
Today, yeah, today being hashtag FASD Awareness Day, and the fact that, you know, I attended a seminar earlier where the team from the FASD Awareness guys in Scotland delivered an informative, and it was really informative, actually. But and when I say informative, it's very kind of low level in comparison to what I would be used to, because such from the Irish government in terms of FASD and FASD awareness. So we're kind of on different pages with that. So, you know, I would kind of not be talking from a position of knowledge with that one, but certainly, you know, it's
I think it's a reasonable question, because I see that it's increasingly just not on the agenda. And I think it's and I was thinking about what we're going to talk about tonight, and we haven't got a particular theme, but some of the things that have really sprung off social media recently is just, you know, obviously I've been putting on my little lives myself, you know, about what do we want from the head of the adoption, sorry, the chair of the Adoption Special Guardianship Leadership Board. What do we want? What are the things? And they've brought up lots of stuff where people, there's just such a broad opinion of what actually they want from that person, whoever that person will be. And you go, that might be the problem. We can't even agree on, you know, if you got a group of adopters and sat them around and said, what matters? A lot will say education, but that's not necessarily in the remit of that board. Oh, complicated. And
it's very complicated.
And the thing that has really vexed me recently is the, which comes out of the contact conversation, is that how do we influence adoption practice? Because I was thinking a comparison would be, you know, for the profession like GPs or doctors, that they have a central board who says, actually, you need to do things like this. And they have quite a strong influence over the individual practice of the the medical profession. And social work doesn't have that. We have a body that we're registered to, but we also have BASWA, the British Association of Social Workers. But that covers every aspect, and they're not we don't have to join BASWA. People don't have to be a member of BASWA. They can't influence the way that, like, the British Medical BMA can, Association. And so, even just some of the questions I've been asking. So I think I've mentioned I'm in this adoption support group on Facebook that's newly, people who are at the beginning of the process or just getting through approval and just getting placements. And what you see so frequently is people saying, my social worker says this, is this true? And then there'll be 45 answers because it's a very vocal, active group. Yeah. And everyone kind of got a different opinion about what is the best practice, what happens with their social worker. And you go, well, so what is, where do we get what best practice is? Where do we get what evidence-based practice is? You know, when we talk about contact, we all, you know, it became really clear over the summer that what best practice looks like is not what is happening.
Yeah.
And when we talk about evidence-based practice, which is a kind of a social work buzzword, which is makes sense that we do what there's evidence for, and that's the thing that defines us, not just what I like or what is easy. In relation to contact, evidence-based practice is not happening.
No. Yeah. So, I think we know that, don't we?
Yeah. But but that's not good enough.
No, I know. Yeah, I know. And so who's
what you going to do?
Kick the backsides of the people who can make it happen, you know. I'm very conscious, and I can't say too much, but you know, well, I can say what I like about the other two, because, you know, they know that
they hate you anyway.
I know that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they hate me that much. They hate me that much. They dished up tea tonight. So. You know, but when I think back to some of the stuff, I just think, you know, how naive were we in 2007-8? When we were like, how could we even possibly think about doing this and doing that and doing the next thing? And now here we sit in 2020 and going, oh, really? Oh, you've heard from them? Okay, yeah. Okay, well, you know, if you want to chat about it, you know, if you need anything.
Yeah,
fully supportive of it. You know, I don't have that kind of
fear, anxiety.
Oh, you're leaving me kind of thing. You know, I don't know. It's really hard to explain because with hindsight is just an amazing tool, isn't it? Because you can say it. We all come through this journey for different reasons, but it's just everybody, you know, you look at all the different conversations that are happening, all the people that, you know, like you do on social media that you follow, and they're really trying to fight hard for a more accessible kind of contact agreement or arrangement. Social workers are very kind of wary to get involved or to kind of reply in a positive or a sensitive manner or whatever. And, you know, I know that Contact is going to bite us in the arse with the wee man very shortly because there's lots going on, and I won't say any more than that, but it's just, it's ridiculous that we have to sit and kind of be at the beck and call of professionals who actually don't know the child, don't know the birth family, and, you know, it's really hard to kind of justify that these days. Like in 2020, when, you know, we sit and talk about it like this.
Well, you've been part of the podcast over the summer. You've, you know, so that consequently, your level of knowledge and understanding about what Contact, the implications, the lifelong implications, all of that. So you've got a genuinely informed position. You go to a social worker who doesn't necessarily hold that position, doesn't necessarily have that position. You would hope would know about this stuff, would have this research to hand. But they're not doing it, or they can't do it. You know, and if I can be really honest, I contacted my postbox team, got an email saying, should I say all this? Yeah. So I contacted them and didn't get a reply for 2 weeks, other than the automated reply. So I then contacted them again, said, I haven't had a reply in 2 weeks. Got a kind of a nervous conversation on the phone call with someone who isn't a social worker, who's just doing their best, but is conscious that they want to try and help me, which is great, thank you. But also acknowledging I can't help you because I'm not a social worker. That's just not, doesn't cut the mustard. If, you know, the kind of this idea that adoption is a lifelong service, that makes a mockery of it. Don't pretend it is. But then talking to someone like Sarah Johal or Kath Dreschner,
you know, I'm just,
we're doing something better.
Yeah, or Kath Drescher. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, excuse me. But then they're the kind of leads and they're RAs. And I would, you know, I don't know. I'd love to think that lots of RAs listen to this podcast.
In your dreams.
Be interesting to know how many do, as in how many. No, but I mean, because actually we, you know, we're talking the talk here, as in we're speaking to people who are really keen to get that point across, and that's the difference, isn't it? You know, if you're not, the webinar thing that I took part in today for FASD, one of the ladies from the FASD awareness in Scotland actually said working with families has really helped them, and listening to families, should I say. So working and listening to families has really helped them to develop their service. That's been more important than some of the evidence that's come through. You know, that was the kind of message that was given on.
Yeah.
And that is quite a key part of it. Because if you don't listen to what your families and your service users, I say in inverted commas, are saying, then how the hell are you supposed to be able to progress your service or progress your, you know, what is expected and what is needed? You can't. You really can't. So when it comes to the voices, we need to listen to the voices. That's it.
Yeah,
it's the people who use it and people who need it that we need to listen to.
And the reality is right now the Adoption Leadership Board has no representation from adopted people on it.
No.
And it has no representation from, it has got national charities who represent, in theory, represent groups.
Yeah.
But if I'd be frank, Adoption UK is looking after adopters.
Yeah.
Grandparents Plus looking after grandparents plus, special guardians, family rights groups looking after families. But that's not the same as the voices of individuals. No.
Exactly. And you and I have said before, all this year, and maybe the latter part of last year, the children act generation are now, they have a voice.
They're adults.
And they are adults. They've been through it. They you know, whether they're kind of, you know, in agreement with adoption or not, who gives? Those are the voices right now that are very important. And that, I think that is what's missing in all of this. Yeah. It's all very well having all these teen groups and stuff, and you know, I'm not dissing anybody who's, you know, who's trying to support teenagers who've been adopted or adults, young adults, just to be clear, but who's able to go to the table on this one and say, this is how it was, this is how it should be, and you know, have a kind of, there's no organization that's doing this.
I mean, that's really true,
and that's what the SGLB is made up of, organizations. You know, if you like you've just said, you've just kind of covered the makeup of some of the organizations that go to the SGLB, but that's the problem.
But even if
nobody there,
I mean, we're probably onto thin ice, and we're probably going to get the door slammed in our face for any potential influence we have there. But also on the SLG, Adoption Special Guardian Leadership, SLGB. Yeah. We have the head, a representative of the heads of local authorities, what's that called? The AD, Association of Directors of Children's Services.
Yeah.
ADCS.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're representative of the workforce. But hang on, if you're a director of a children's services,
yeah,
when was the last time you sat in a permanency planning meeting?
In a forum or, yeah, anything like that. Yeah.
You are so far removed from practice. Now, you, of course, that's maybe my gross ignorance that they're all sat, you know, having team meetings. But the reality is, then to have that organisation, are they representing practitioners in a way that is truly representative of practice? You know, are they representing RAAs in a way that's truly representative of what is happening in RAAs now? And so it's hugely, I don't know, I don't want to get drawn on into kind of just criticizing the board, because I think the board, often boards evolve, don't they? And they grow into something.
Definitely not. Yeah, exactly. And I would like to think that the new chair will kind of incorporate that into the, you know, into their kind of role and make sure that it's covered. But I just think it's a bit stinky at the minute, where it's been all about the parents. And don't get me wrong, I mean, you know, I've been tempted to put this out on social media there's different kind of nests. That's a word I'm going to use. Nests. So we've got nests of adoptive parents. We've got nests of special guardians. We've got nests of foster carers. We've got nests of adopted people. We've got nests of long-term fostered young people. We've got nests of care leavers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's the nests. We've all got our own experiences, and we all bring something specific to the table. When we're looking at the young people stroke adults who have experienced this, those are the voices that matter. That's it. But we've not been in this position before.
Yes.
And I think that's the issue. We've not been in this position before, so therefore it's not really been a thing. And now it is a thing where they're able to talk for themselves, they're able to very much vocalize their feelings about what they experienced, and they're also able to represent themselves. And whilst we talk about representation, my experience is different to your experience, is different to, I don't know,
that's always
the man down the road who adopted experiences, but we all have a common, there is a common theme for adoptive parents, so therefore would it not fit that there's a common theme for people who've been adopted?
You would presume so, or you'd be able to draw out a range, a common,
yeah, exactly,
like you say, a broad set of similarities. But even just having the people, you know, who've been adopted on the table, it demonstrates that this is a service for those people.
Exactly.
And it's a service that they're brought through at a time when they have no choice. or what choice I have is very limited. And it then benefits from those people's experience going, that stuff doesn't work, or that. The complexity is, I guess, I also think, if we're being really honest, is that my children have no idea of the process they went through.
Yeah.
So they were tiny, or they were oblivious, or they were more caught up with Lego. So again, it's just a very...
But they'll soon have a voice. You know, they'll soon be able to share what was good, what was bad, why you shouldn't have, even be their parent, you know, let's face it.
Well, yeah. I'm getting full versions of that, yeah. And some more, that and more besides. Yes, interesting days in Coates Towers. I think I was saying in the webcast that we went out for a meal. You know, very brave I was. I went out for a meal, and there was a guy down the couple of tables down. She went, Lottie said, "See him down there?" Of course, yeah. You know, he's a good guy, maybe my age, but he's black and he's got muscles and he's in a tight fitting t-shirt. And she went, I so wish he was my dad. And went, "Oh, thanks, Rosa." And she went, "Suck it up." Just, you go, all right, fair enough. We had a right laugh.
Yeah, but then she is 15 and it's probably for more reasons than even you would have been. You'd have been oblivious to most of them at that point in time, to be fair. So. Any hooser.
You were going to talk, I saw the other day we had a chat and you were quite vexated by language. You got yourself.
I've been vexed by a lot of things lately.
What's vexing you? Let's have a little 10-minute vex. You can say whatever you want.
I don't know. I'll tell you what I am vexed with. Instagram. Oh.
What the hell's going on in Instagram?
Well, I'm just like, I'm in shock. I actually witnessed today or yesterday someone shared the front page of the prospective adopters report on Instagram.
Shut up.
With
all the details, like their address and...
Well, I mean, no, not that far. It was kind of their cover photo and stuff like that. And when I had a kind of look at their
feed,
I was like, yeah, well, I did. I mean, let's face it.
Oh,
I don't know. What are you going to say? But I was kind of just really shocked by that. I mean, we talk about privacy and not necessarily secrecy, but, you know, keeping kind of...
confidential.
The details of our journeys kind of reasonably quiet and secret and, you know. But then to read, like, the front page where it says, "I recommend that duh and duh are approved, blah, 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 blah." And that was today. But there's also, I've still got this issue with blimmin' language. The language that we're using and why we're not listening to what is and what isn't right to use. Now, you know, there's kind of cohorts of, even in like the LGBTQ+ community, that use words like queer and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, that wouldn't be my description of myself, because I don't see myself as queer. I see myself as gay. But when we're thinking about language, seriously, come on.
Because have you seen this? I've seen this phrase, positive adoption language. Have you seen that?
Yes, pal.
Pal. Yeah. I'll be your pal.
Pal.
So that's the idea that we, instead of using birth mum, biological mum, we say tummy mummy. Is that...
But that's the thing. What is appropriate?
Or natural.
What do we know? You know? Exactly. Biological, natural, tummy. Because let's face it, when a child is 4, what language are we going to use? Because it's all relevant to the age of the understanding of the child, isn't it? I'm saying 4. I have no experience for 4-year-old, so I wouldn't know. But, you know, I'm assuming that tummy mummy is the thing that you'd use at the age of 4. But whether that's something that would carry on, I don't know.
You might be talking to the wrong person. You may need to go and find yourself another podcast partner for this one, because I just think tummy mummy sounds stupid.
Well, I do as well. I mean, I've never used it personally. Oh, never used it.
No.
Yeah.
We've always probably
offended all the women who listen to this podcast who've used
sorry, ladies.
We don't mean to, but it's just like, all I'm saying is, so we all have our different journeys, we all have our different conversations, but ultimately, all of our children do not live with the people who gave birth to them. Okay?
That's true.
The be all and end all of it. So, Ashley, when I'm talking about, so as an example, you know, we're a same-sex couple. I don't know if you knew that.
I'm the last to find out everything.
Yeah, I know you are, aren't you? Didn't you come to the wedding? Sorry.
In a literal sense.
Oh, my God. Were you asleep? But as an example, we would never say birth mum, biological mum in our family, because actually, mum is mum. Yeah.
But that makes sense, because it can only possibly be one person.
Yeah, exactly. But in terms of biological or birth dad, if they're talking about it, we will just say dad. We don't make that differentiation. I don't know if that's weird, I don't know if it's just me or us.
It might be a man thing. I don't know, because I would talk about your mum. So I was talking to the little one about her family members, and I was talking about, well, your dad was like this. Your dad did, you know, this is the story of your dad. But we both know exactly who we're talking about, because when I talk to my child about her dad, I'm not like some highfalutin saying, oh, well, some sort of highfalutin way or cunning way of talking about myself. It's obvious. This idea of positive adoption language to kind of sanitize adoption does it just reinforce that Disneyfication, that idea of a tummy mummy sounds so romantic, and it's a really pleasant way of saying, but for little ones, your mammy. Well, I mean, showing my northern and your Scottish tones, mammy. Would you say mammy or mummy? What would you say, mammy or mummy?
Mummy.
Mummy?
Mummy, yeah.
But you're Scottish. Don't mummy say...
Mummy.
Is it not mammy?
Or your mammy.
Your mammy. Well, I'm from the northeast, so it's mammy. Your mammy?
Mummy? Mummy?
Well, yeah, you manage your mammy.
It's on the E, on the end. Right? But it's just all this language thing, isn't it? I mean, well, for me it is anyway, and I'm just very conscious, you know, there's been massive Twitteroo arguments this week over the use of the term gotcha day.
Let's dive in, but
the gotcha day thing really kind of got me thinking about this sort of stuff, because that's not a phrase that we would use. And it never was a phrase that we would use, to be fair.
It's American.
I'm not sure. Well, I think it kind of is that. Yeah.
Coming over here, stealing our language. Is
like an American origin.
It feels American.
It's not a phrase that I would have used. And it's certainly not a phrase that I would use now. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not out to say it shouldn't be used or it should be used, but I'm just saying that I think that it's all very well to use that sort of language within your family, if that's what you want. And obviously it grows with that, because, you know, I always say to the boys now, I say, oh, it's the whatever it may.
Anniversary of.
The whatever it may. That sounds really so bad, doesn't it? It's the 17th of May, and this is the anniversary of the day that we met you, or this is the day that you were placed with us, or this is, you know. Yeah. So but I guess in terms of how, I want to use the word cringe, I don't know why, but I don't want them cringing at the thought of saying, oh, it's your gotcha day, and let's have a cake and let's have candles and blah, 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 you know, because that's not us, right? But that's not to say that that's not other families, because we all use language differently. But my point is that if we're going to use it publicly, then we have to be open to criticism for it, because it doesn't fit with everybody.
Yeah, but why do people feel the need to criticise?
Well, because people do. Let's face it. You know, Twitter. I mean, I've
stupid question.
You know, I know, but you know yourself. The last kind of year and a half, 2 years, I've kind of distanced myself from social media because of the fear of using words that don't fit with kind of right. what people...
Let's you know. Have an experiment. Let's write the most deeply critical... No, let's write a tweet that's going to provoke the biggest response we possibly can without actually breaching...
That's scandalous. Off you go.
Yeah. When we celebrate my... Yeah, that's mean and mean-spirited. But I just think that...
All I'm saying is that we just need to be kind of, you know, if we're going to put ourselves out there on social media, and we've had this conversation before about promoting ourselves, about, you know, kind of the kind of family unit being promoted through social media, all that sort of stuff. And I get why people do it. I guess that there's an element within the adoption community that kind of feel the need to say things. And when I say things, I mean, where else have people got to do it? You know, especially during the last 6 months, because nobody's really had anywhere to put things. You know, you can't sit in a support group and say, oh, it was, you know, it was this day last week and this was stressful and blah, blah, blah. You know, and that was a tweet that I saw the other day about what is the hardest day for you during the week, what is the most kind of triggering day for your children during the week, and
you know,
and that was another one that got bloody ploughed upon, and it's a bit unfair because actually we're asking, and I'll take you back 20 minutes when we talked about the nest. Adopters are asking their nest what they think. They're not asking anybody else, because it's not that we don't want to hear from that cohort, sorry, that other nest. It's just that we're asking something that's relevant to us because we're in a position where we need that advice, we need that support, we need that help. It's not disputing that the other nest knows any better or any less. It's just we need help from our own nest, and it's really hard to do that when it's so publicly and put out on social media.
I mean, increasingly life is played out through social media, especially through lockdown, and I just wonder whether you made me really think differently a little bit there about this idea that for those people who've not had a voice, Twitter gives you a voice. And so actually in the past you may not have been exposed to that, or maybe you see something that kind of really hits home about from your own experience.
Yeah.
And you can say something. You can, you know, it's not how I would do it. It's, you know, I've seen things that have upset me on Twitter, and if it really upset me, I'll contact it, I'll direct message people. But that's just who I am. And again, it's very patriarchal of me to say, well, I think you shouldn't comment. And like you say, if you're going to do stuff on social media, then maybe you need to be big enough to suck up the consequences of that.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it.
People might definitely be rude. Bow out, don't answer if it's going to get you into trouble. It is really interesting.
But that's the thing, isn't it? You know, the more you're applying it into kind of argument. Oh, God. I mean, we've all done some clangers. Let's face it. You know, I've not done a clanger for a couple of years on Twitter, to be fair. But we've all done it. We've all put stuff out there that we shouldn't put out there, or that we said that we didn't mean, or that we misconstrued something. You know, we've all done that.
We've responded too quickly.
If you're going to be... Yeah, if we're going to use language that actually is going to kind of instigate a bit of an argument, then maybe just don't use it, or tone it down, or, you know, lock your account down.
I know where this all started. I've just remembered it's the word placement, isn't it?
That's
where this all started.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'd forgotten about that as well.
You had a cow, didn't you, by direct message to me, didn't you?
We both had a cow. As did...
Shall we say who it was? We can't just draw the people into our little Twitter.
Yeah, it's Ruth.
We should get her on the show.
Ruth. Hi, Mommy. We've been trying for ages to get her on, but she sent us a...
We can't agree terms yet, can we?
Oh! It was one of those things where you just go.
It was a discussion. It was a clip. I'm not even going to say where it was. It was a clip that sort of was talking about challenges in placements, and I used the word there.
Placement disruption, actually.
Placement disruption, yes. Which otherwise known as families breaking up, and it was about adoption and people coming into adoption and not working out, and, you know, if you're not bonding, well, maybe you need to cut your losses. It was like, whoa, what the funk? It was very, interesting. Yeah. Is that weird?
I actually switched off when I first heard the word placement, because I was thinking, anybody who uses the word placement when we're thinking about families and belonging and stability and all that sort of stuff, no. If you can use the word placement, you're very kind of removed from even your own situation. Let's face it, that I've had over the last 15, 14 years as placement. We've been a family from the start, you know?
Yeah. What I do think, and I've thought about this because, you know, I literally have too much time on my hands. I thought it's interesting because I used to work in construction, and in any industry or any sector, you develop your own technical language, don't you?
Yeah.
So, like, you'll be able to, you know, from the different places you've worked, you'll have, you know, you'll be able to talk about things in a way that people don't understand or don't quite get what you're talking about. So it's that technical language, you know, when I was, you know, and I think adoption, we sort of slip into that technical language, which is not for, it's not for public consumption. You know, it's a very, you know, how I talk to my social work colleagues, it's not, you know, it's not nothing to be, nothing worrying about it, but I'll use a shorthand that will kind of very technically say we're going to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
That's not for public consumption. That way of language is for us as professionals in that context. But when I'm talking to you about your life and your child's life, but then putting that out in a public environment, even disruption is a crap phrase. Because it's not
a phrase that we should be using.
It's a huge catch-all for so many ranges of circumstances, you know. Every single one is different, and it means so many different things to so many people. It's a hugely evocative pants phrase. And we still don't measure them, so we don't know how many there are, or whatever they even are. There you go.
Exactly.
Anything else?
No, I'm just thinking of everybody who, because your school's gone back gradually over the last week, haven't they? So some have even gone back today, to be fair.
Some schools, yeah.
And I'm just conscious that it's kind of one of those times where, you know, we've got back to school and we know, like, you know, last 6 years, 7 years, like, publicly I've known more about going back to school than probably should have done, and that's a tricky time. But add into that all the kind of stuff that's going on at the minute, and I'm very conscious of the fact that, you know, our community is potentially struggling. And, you know, we struggle every September, let's face it. But this September, it's a little bit different, and, you know, it's not kind of for the faint-hearted. And I think that, you know, I kind of doff my cap to us all, really, because, you know, we've gone 6 months, potentially, some of us. You know, some people have, you know, taken their children's school because obviously they were able to, and that's great for the UK. We've not had that facility here, sadly. And I say sadly, I don't know if that's sadly. Well, actually, I think we've done better
different.
Not having schools open. To be, yeah, exactly.
Everyone's different.
But I'm just very conscious of that, and I'm very conscious that we're all kind of in different positions in terms of anxieties and stuff. And yeah,
I've got friends who are struggling, really struggling. And it's not. It's school is part of that picture, but it's like it's one of those things that the bucket is full and school is the last pebble that makes it overflow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's where I'm sitting right now, because actually before we went into lockdown, I'd have been like, you don't want to go to school? Why is this? You know, and whereas now I'm like, you know, if you really don't want to go to school, or if you get to school and you want to come home for whatever reason, then, you know, if you can kind of tell me why, then, you know, I'm fine with that. And it's very, it's just a very different kind of position to be in, isn't it?
This is a personal question, but do you think that that's maybe down to the fact that you're not, the kind of the terror of having him home, or the terror that a lot of us have felt about, crikey, imagine him not going to school, that's going to be horrible, or that's going to be difficult. But actually the reality is very different. You've found a way that makes work, and you kind of go, actually, I'm not going to, I've faced that fear.
Yeah, quite likely, actually. Yeah, I mean, you know, before lockdown, I remember like thinking, oh, like, let's face it, nobody knew what lockdown was going to look like, did we?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't realize that it was going to be quite as extreme as it was. So I think you're probably right in some respects, because, you know, if I think back to when he was first placed with us, and it was the intention that he was going to be homeschooled, and I decided within the first 2 weeks, yeah, you can laugh because you've met him.
Were you literally going to sit at home and go, this is a quadrilateral?
I wasn't sure how that was going to work, to be fair.
You signed up to it?
I really didn't know.
Oh, you were fast and loose with the truth.
Kind of, yes, but kind of no. We were kind of adamant that he wasn't going to be homeschooled, to be fair. Because that wasn't good for him either. He's a very sociable person, do you know? And even at the age of 7 versus the age of 14.
He's gregarious. So, but, gregarious, isn't
yeah,
he?
Gregarious, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you're right in some ways, actually, because we've witnessed it, and actually it was all right. And I think that I'm not too sure what kind of, I don't even want to know what exclusion looks like over here, to be honest with you. But I think that, you know, even with the kind of exclusion kind of condition put on his head, I'm sure that we would work a way around it based on how he worked after the first 4 weeks, because let's face it, the first 4 weeks didn't do very much, didn't engage at all until he got bored. And I went, actually, I need to do something. What can I do? Oh, well, you've got schoolwork on Microsoft Teams. You know, off you pop.
But then that worked, you know, didn't it?
But that worked for him. And by the end of it, he was very much, and I've probably said it before, he's very much like, do you know what? I really love doing it like this, because the teachers aren't in my face, not telling me off, they're not doing this and not asking me if I'm listening, the teaching assistant isn't pushing the pen around the paper, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of less intrusive and kind of head on for him. So I think, yeah, you're probably right, that's probably one of the reasons. And I think you do grow used to things as well, you know.
Yeah,
it's been 6 months, that's a long time actually, when you think about it.
For us it's a small percentage, but for him it's a big chunk of his life, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So bless him. You're probably right.
Thank you.
Our coach, right again. That's why he's got the MBE.
I'm up to 3 now. Got across my 49 years coming up.
Well, you're way older than me, so obviously.
Sure, you wish. I am gonna go now because it's late and I have things to do. I've got a
It's 5:10 in the afternoon. I was obviously tired because he's missed his grandpa nap today.
I would love to have had a grandpa nap today. I got stuck on the North Circular for hours and hours today.
Oh, bless you. Bless you, Gavna.
I was very brave and I got a donut when I got to the office.
Oh, lovely.
One of my colleagues had a birthday, so she'd bought us all donuts.
Oh, okay. Socially distant donuts.
Yeah, she got it in a catapult and fired it at me.
Oh, fabulous! Yeah, with a latex glove on. Yeah,
yeah. Actually, that's no different to normal, to be honest. That's how I'm interacting well, when you're in the office. Most times, people are throwing things at me.
Fair play.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, I'm going to go, and as always, have a fantastic week, and I'll see you next week. Next week on the webcast, we're going to talk to a couple who are transracial adopters, and I know that they're a couple, so we've got 2 people on the webcast. That's exciting.
Fabulous.
So there you go. Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.